Our next speaker is M. Stanton Evans, author, columnist, research institute director, and former president of the society. Stan?
Thank you, Tony. It's former vice president, but I appreciate the promotion. I think I can clear up this whole thing. I would like to say before I begin that I do not consider this to be an adversarial event, and I do not consider myself hostile to the neoconservatives. Some of my best friends are neoconservatives. And I think it is useful to explore the differences in style, and I agree very much with a lot of the description that you just heard. I think that was very astute, and with some marginal disagreements, I think quite accurate. It is useful to talk about doctrine. Doctrine is very important, and I think we need to have these discussions, as we've had them down through the decades here at the Philadelphia Society. I'm reminded, saw my old friend Lou Euler here, we were at Yale back in the early 1950s, and talk about being conservatives in a hostile environment. Lou and I were two of about 10 people who founded a conservative club at Yale, and the first thing we had to do was to have a dispute about doctrine. And we had some people, I mean, you want to hear old right, listen to this. We had some people in that club who would not support Joe McCarthy. Right there was a problem. And there were some other people who would not support the repeal of the income tax. So we decided that those were the animating principles of our group. You had to be for Joe McCarthy, not only his goals, but his methods. And you had to be in favor of repealing the income tax. And if you didn't believe that, you were out of the club. Now, of course, that was over 30 years ago. And Lou and I both were, you know, kind of young and fuzzy-headed idealists. In the intervening years, we have gradually drifted to the right. Such discussions are important because doctrine is necessary not simply to exclude people. Quite often it can do the opposite. It is important to remember what it is we are trying to do. What is the point? What is it that we seek to achieve in our intellectual activities, political activities, and so on? Lack of doctrinal understanding can, in fact, be the cause of divisions. And I think that has been true in conservative circles for some time. It is true in the sense that we have been taught a way of looking at society, looking at political issues, looking at our intellectual history, that causes us to oppose each other when we should be united. The way we have been taught this, the shorthand expression I use for this is the liberal history lesson. And the liberal history lesson tells us, in essence, that things were pretty good back in pagan antiquity, and you had Periclean Athens, and you had Republican Rome, and you had some very nice art, and some plays and some philosophy. And then came the fall of the Roman Empire, and there ensued 1,000 years of nothing. Then came the Renaissance, and we rediscovered pagan antiquity, and everything got good again, and then we had modernity and democracy and science and progress. And that's where we are today. This way of looking at our intellectual history, which is essentially a product of the Renaissance and the Enlightenment, causes people to believe that there is an inverse ratio between the sway of biblical religion and many of the values that we cherish in a free society. The idea that freedom, limited government, technical progress, and so on come from the denial of our religious heritage rather than from its affirmation. That way of looking at things is completely wrong. In point of fact, all of the distinctive values of the West, the distinctive values that we cherish in this society, come from our biblical heritage. The idea we were talking about this, John Lofton and I were holding a mini-seminar out in the hall on this very subject. the idea of the limited state, the idea of constitutionalism in which the king is under God and under the law, the idea of lifting up the individual and holding the individual to be precious because he or she is a child of God and made in God's image. The idea of social contract, which we're taught in the liberal history lesson was invented out of nothing by John Locke, is in point of fact a secular rendition of the idea of covenant, which we get out of the Bible. The ideas of federalism, the ideas of representative government and the practice of federalism and representative government come out of the medieval experience in Europe, primarily in England, and were transplanted, all of these institutions were transplanted to these shores by the religious dissidents who escaped or left England in the early 17th century, and that is where our political institutions and ideas come from. They do not come from classical antiquity, and they do not come from the Renaissance. The problem is that nobody seems to know this. It isn't taught in our schools. And the notion that, therefore, you must reject our biblical heritage in order to affirm these values is the source not only of differences between conservatives and neoconservatives, but is the source of the disagreement we have had for two decades within this society between libertarians and traditionalists, because the issue is posed as either or. Either you choose the religious heritage or you choose the freedom. You can't have both. In point of fact, the correct formulation of the relationship of these institutions and our heritage is you cannot have the institutions without the heritage. That's where the institutions come from. The neoconservatives are even more obviously affected by the liberal history lesson and the precepts drawn from it than are members of the conservative community. They are, in fact, former liberals who are trying to work their way out of the bankrupt condition of liberalism. I do not condemn them for this. Quite the contrary. I welcome them. I'm glad to see them. I think they're doing some wonderful things, and I admire the intellectual power of the exercise, and it is much tougher to arrive at correct conclusions from mistaken premises than it is to arrive at the correct conclusions from the correct premises. It takes a lot more brains to do that than to begin with the right principles and wind up with the right conclusion. A final comment. The neoconservatives, it seems to me, are very good because they accept so many of these assumptions from the liberal history lesson. They're very good on issues that have to do with the proper affirmative uses of the state. That is, they're very good on foreign policy questions. They're very good on questions of internal order, criminal justice, things of that nature, which are essentially Aristotelian. And you see they keep referring back to Aristotle. There's a lot of Aristotle in Irving Kristol's approach, which he's getting from Leo Strauss, just as there is in George Will. And he is a neoconservative by this definition. Where they are not as good, although they're getting better, is on the limitations of the state. And what they do not understand, it seems to me, and then I say this with all due respect because what the work they do is awfully good, is that there have to be principled limitations on the scope of the state which are more or less defined in a constitutional structure rather than a kind of ad hoc improvisational approach where you just keep trying things until you find something that seems to work. And I think this goes to the distinction that Dr. Berger was drawing. Ultimately, it seems to me, the neoconservatives have to get back, and they are working their way back, to this heritage. And the situation here is very similar to that, it seems to me, that Vogelin describes in Israel and Revelation, where you had the philosophers, as brilliant as they were, could not reach the idea of transcendence despite all of their intellectual power. But the minute you open the Bible, the minute you are in Israel, there it is, because it was handed to them by divine revelation. And it is getting back to that, it seems to me, which will complete the transition upon which the neoconservatives are embarked. Thank you.